Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive's Employee of the Month, 2 months in a row. Leave a message at the...
Hey, Jamie. It's me, Jamie. Do not forget to buy lentils, or the lentil soup you're making for dinner will be sorely lacking. By the way, Mrs. Calloway says thanks for helping her bundle home and auto. She appreciates the extra savings, even though you kept using the word apropos incorrectly. But the main thing is, do not forget to buy, what was it? Something apropos the lentil soup. Sorry, I'll call you back.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Discounts not available in all states or situations.
You are Locked On Thunder, your daily podcast on the Oklahoma City Thunder, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello there, everyone. We're locked in for episode 213 of Locked On Thunder, presented by the Norman Transcript. I'm your host, Fred Katz. Locked On Thunder is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Head on to iTunes, search Locked On Thunder, subscribe to the podcast there, leave a review. Once you're on that page, and find us on audioboom.com. Log on to normantranscript.com, check out my blog, Thunder Road. It's under the sports tab on the site. See all my Thunder coverage there. You can find all my draft coverage there. Coverage from Thursday night, follow-up articles the next day, and the next day, and the next day, and then MVP stuff, because the MVP ceremony, I should say the award ceremony, award show, whatever it is on Monday. They're going to announce MVP there. Russell Westbrook is probably going to win that. Remember, I'm on Monday, Wednesday, Friday. So today we're just talking draft. Monday morning's episode will be an award show preview. I'll have something on that. And then Wednesday's episode will be a one-day late wrap-up. On the line with me, following the draft, I'm recording this Friday afternoon, and I really haven't really slept over the last, 30 hours, is Down to Dunks, Daily Thunders, and the world's Andrew Schlecht.
Hello, world. I'm Andrew.
So for those who think the Thunder traded for the 21st pick last night, Andrew, there have been a lot of discrepancies in my and Andrew's lives of people that we know thinking that the draft is, or people we come into contact with thinking that the draft is just like not understanding what a trade is. The Thunder made one pick in the draft on Thursday night. They had the 21st overall pick, and they took from the NBL, the Australian League, Terrence Ferguson, 19-year-old wing, 6'7", 6'9" wingspan. Averaged 4 points and 1 rebound in 15 minutes a game, 31% from three. Give me your hottest Terrence Ferguson take.
Oh, the hottest take?
The hottest.
The Thunder just took a City Blue. The hottest? This is a blue player forever. That's the hottest.
That's I have an even hotter one. The Thunder is so far from a ring, they have to scoop into the Warriors fan base to find a player to help.
Ouch. That's too painful for me. That's more pain than it is heat.
Hey, heat burns, my friend. Heat burns.
It does. To be honest, I was disappointed because I think that there were a lot of guys on the board at that point that I liked a lot better, that I think fit, that could come in and play right away. We talked a lot earlier this week about how the Thunder could pick a guy that could come in and be a part of the rotation immediately. And that's not Terrence Ferguson. Unless I'm completely misreading, the kind of prospect that he is, he likely will play for the Blue. I don't think that he'll be a Blue player forever, but I expect him to kind of go back and forth between the Blue and the Thunder this next season.
Now, here's my actual take. I gave my unreasonably hot take. My actual take is that, this is going to be horrible podcasting real quick, because my actual take is, I don't know. I really don't know that much, but I don't know enough about him. When he gets taken, I have all of these, I see all these mentions. I see all of this analysis on Twitter, either people in my mentions or people on my timeline having strong opinions of, oh, this is a great pick, or, oh, this is a terrible pick. And I'm like, are you really sitting around watching the NBL all day? I don't know.
Yeah.
And you know what? At 21, I think the conversation that is most relevant after this is not what is Terrence Ferguson going to be, because I don't think Sam Presti even knows what Terrence Ferguson is going to be, because he's the 21st pick in the draft, and he's 19 years old, and he's anybody would tell you that he is raw and he's an athlete who's got potential. He's got 3-and-D potential. He could potentially possibly play on both ends, but he's got a long way to go in terms of building his body, in terms of refining out his skill set, all of those sorts of things. That's what every single scout will tell you, the same thing on that. And because of that, who knows what he's going to be, especially because he's, 21st picks are shots in the dark for the most part. You miss some, and if you hit half of them, you're doing an incredible job. But the conversation to have here, I think, is about Sam Presti, because they could have gone for need, right? They could have drafted for need. In a situation where they've never really been in this situation before, a middle-tier playoff team that was cash-strapped up against luxury tax, and they could have found themselves where, okay, we're going to draft for need. And then Sam Presti still employed that same philosophy he does every other draft, right?
He did. And I'll, just for the record, I did understand your question last night when Sam Presti acted like he didn't understand your question.
You know what, though?
I knew exactly what you meant.
You knew what I meant, but it was poorly asked. I had been sitting in that chair for five. So I asked Sam Presti about that concept I just brought up, for those of you who didn't sit around at 12:30 in the morning watching Sam Presti's press conference on news9.com. I asked Sam Presti about that, and about 5 seconds into the question, I'd been sitting in that chair for actually 6 hours, like the 6.5 hours, the entire draft. And it was after midnight. I mean, I'm tired. Yeah. And I, about 5 seconds into the question, I just thought, oh my gosh, I completely forgot what I was going to ask. And so I just kind of stumbled, and then I was like, oh yeah, I remember. And I came back to it, and it was just so long-winded. It was like the longest question I've ever asked. And then Sam was just like, I'm not sure what you're asking, Fred. And so then I came around, and I think I asked it better the second time, because I remembered what I was saying. But I actually took no offense to that, and I don't think Sam was trying to play me. Like, I think that was a horrifically asked question. That was a D+, which I'm only given the extra upping grade because I like myself and I wanna pass myself.
Yeah, I mean, I get that. I also wonder, do you think that this is a nod to Sabonis and Jeremy Grant? Because if you take any of the guys that we liked, if you take OG or Ojale or those guys, if you take them, they play the same position as both those guys. So, like, to me, I think part of it is a nod to them, and then part of it's like we've got to get a wing that can do something. And who else was there as far as like a two-way wing? And I think for me, I would say OG is that guy, but he may be better as a four in the NBA. But if it's not him, then who's left on the board that it is? And that's where I can understand the Terrence Ferguson pick, even though I don't like it. Like, I understand that he's got potential, but like you said, nobody's sitting and watching all of his minutes in Australia. And to be honest, if you are, I still don't know if you know anything. Like, I don't think the stats say much about him in Australia. I don't think his minutes say a whole lot. I think that Presti and them were more, they seem to be more impressed with just the fact that he tried to fit in and that he was kind of in a tough, like, life situation. Like, this is more about like a life situation than it is about basketball, it seemed like to me.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how he adapts. I always find the debate now the NBL is not a high quality professional league. There are better high. I mean, it's not the Spanish league. It's not the French league. Like, it's not a lot of these European leagues where we see tremendous high caliber basketball, which would just destroy the NCAA champions. You know, you look at the Spanish ACB league or something like that, and the worst team in that league would just absolutely destroy the best team in college basketball. But playing with pros means something. And Jenny Carlson made this point in her article in the Oklahoman, which I thought was a really good one. The people who dislike that pick are disliking it because of, you know, maybe the numbers that he had in Australia or whatever it was. But if he had instead decided to go to Arizona, which is where he was going to go out of high school before he decided to go pro in Australia, if he had instead decided to go to Arizona and he were just a one and done at Arizona, even if he had a down year at Arizona, how would that help to frame this sort of pick differently? Picking a guy domestically as opposed to internationally? I thought it was an interesting question to pose.
It is interesting. I talked with Jonathan Charks about that, and he actually thinks that it would have been worse for him. Like, he thinks that being, especially with that particular team, with that particular Arizona team where they played a real slow half-court offense and they didn't seem to, I mean, nobody did well for Arizona this year. He like highlighted Kobe Simmons, who was also like a five-star recruit, who ended up looking terrible. He went undrafted. He did end up signing with Memphis this morning. He says that he thinks that he would have looked even worse, and thinks that going overseas actually like helped him, which
that's,
I thought
that's
was
interesting.
Pretty interesting.
That is interesting. You know, sometimes it does with these guys. Like, okay, so Brandon Jennings did this. Brandon Jennings was actually also supposed to go to Arizona, and he ended up shunning Arizona, and mm-hmm. he went pro in Italy for a year. Brandon Jennings didn't get playing time either. Now, Brandon Jennings is a different personality. I don't know Terrence Ferguson, but it's very hard to be the same personality as Brandon Jennings. And from what I hear about Terrence Ferguson, he's no Brandon Jennings. And that's just because no one is Brandon Jennings. And Emmanuel Mudiay did a similar thing where he played pro in China, and he was supposed to go to SMU, mm-hmm. and instead he went to China and played and came over. And I don't think you can use their careers just because they happen to play internationally as Americans instead of going to college. I don't think you can use their careers as, you know, comparables or examples or things that you can try to use to project how Ferguson will do. They're different people who went to different leagues in different countries under different circumstances. And it's just not a plausible thing. But but I do find the trend interesting. Like I wonder with players now finding other ways where players – it being more acceptable for players to do that, players maybe getting paid is a more acceptable thing now. I wonder how that's going to progress and, like, what that's going to look like in, like, 10 years if the NCAA continues to not let players get paid.
Yeah, I mean, if you can go make $1 million and then go to the NBA, I mean, why not? And I know Ferguson is friends with Mudiay, and so I think that – I would assume that that impacted his decision to go do that.
They played a game at Chesapeake Energy Arena.
Why not have extra $1 million?
They played a game at the Peak when they were in high school, Mudiay and Ferguson.
Yeah, right. And if you want, I was watching this morning, if you want to feel really, really good about this Terrence Ferguson pick, which I know a lot of people locally aren't, go watch the Nike Hoop Summit game that he played in, because he was pretty amazing in that game. And it's just one game. You can't just with everything that we know about Terrence Ferguson, you can't take a lot from it. Like, you have to take everything with a grain of salt, like the good takes, the bad takes, everything. Like, this kid is basically like a super raw athlete that we know can shoot it a little bit, but he's a blank slate. And to be honest, I think that the Thunder might be one of the best teams in the league for him personally to land on, because I think he's going to get a chance to develop. I think you land on a lot of different teams in this league, you're not going to get a chance to become, you know, who you should be or who you could be. And I think the Thunder is a good spot for him to land.
What's funny is the Thunder are a very patient organization, right? Mm-hmm. You have to really mess up in order for the organization to lose its patience with you. Like Mitch McGarry, I think they lost their patience with him. And it was because Mitch McGarry didn't deserve their patience anymore. And other situations where a guy works hard, buys into the Thunder way, however they define that, they're patient with those people for the most part. And they're patient in developing talent and all those sorts of things, you know? Like, you know, with your boy Samaje Grissom this year. They just kept playing him. They are patient in a lot of ways with a lot of these guys, especially when they're trying to develop young talent. And I think that lends to your point, right? Where this is a situation that'll allow him to develop those skills. And it's an organization that historically has that – they have that history of being able to build up guys who go from raw to actually developing some sort of skill set to become helpful NBA players.
Yeah, and if they do buy in, like you said, they all if the guys are bought in and they like them, they will play him for the Thunder. And so, like, I've been beating the drum that I think he's a blue player, and I do. I think he is this next year, but I could be wrong about that. Like, they might keep him on the bench, and they may try to play him some and just try to plug him in and see if he can get hot this next season, because they like to play their young guys if they can. They like to play them early, like with Samaj. I mean, Samaj clearly was not ready to play, but they kept plugging him in. Sabonis started for the team Like, who would have thought that he'd be the starting power forward? You know, Steven Adams played a lot his rookie year when I didn't think that he would, and he fouled the crap out of everybody the whole season. But they like to play their young guys early if they're bought in. And so I would say that I think that Terrence doesn't play a whole lot this next season, but I think there's also a chance he does, because I think getting guys NBA experience is vitally important to their development. I don't know how great it is for a player to just spend an entire year in the D League. I think it helps some, but I wonder like how much development's happening there versus like getting real NBA minutes. What do you think?
It's an interesting question. I think it probably depends on the circumstance, right? Like, it probably just depends on the player. I think some players really need that. Now, I also think it depends on the player's mental makeup as much as his physical makeup. Like, it's not necessarily where he is in his game and his development, but how easily discouraged he is. Like, if he's the type of personality that you're going to put in, and if he's just going to play terribly in the NBA, and it's going to discourage him, and he's going to kind of wreck him mentally, then you don't want to do it. And there are players who are like that. I have no idea what kind of mentality Terrence Ferguson is in that sense. And I don't think you really know till you see it. But there are players who are like that, who take on that sort of mentality. And I think those sorts of players are the guys that you leave in the D League and you let them build up their confidence until they kind of have the reps to where they feel comfortable doing it in the NBA, you know? And then there are some guys who are just like, I don't care. You know, I am the greatest player on the floor, or at the very least, I belong to be there. You know, they don't have to be J.R. Smith. They can just be like Alex Abrines, you know? Alex Abrines walks in the door and is like, I belong here. Like, I think that's one of the reasons why Russ has taken to him so much. Because he doesn't care about, I mean, I think he acknowledges how good Russ is, but he's not starstruck by Russ. He's not starstruck by the situation. When Russell Westbrook has the ball, he's the only one who will politely be like, yeah, but I could take this three right now. And I think some guys have that mentality. Abrines has that mentality. And I don't know what Ferguson's is. It'll be fun to watch and see where he is, what he's like on a personal level. Because a lot of it comes down to personality type too.
Yeah. I'm not going to pretend that I know a lot about him, but I've listened to a couple of his interviews from the last couple of years, and he seems to be a super confident dude. I mean, before the day that he made the decision to go to Australia, he was telling people that he thought he would be a lottery pick for sure. So, like, he's got confidence. I don't know what it looks like now after being in Australia and averaging 4 points a game. I don't know if it's the same in being picked 21st. I don't know if it's the same, but he seems to have confidence. But overall, here's what we know about Terrence Ferguson. Not a lot. Like, we just don't know. We don't know a lot about this guy except that he can jump out of the gym and he weighs 186 pounds. Like, he's super duper skinny. But I think that's really about all we know about him.
Well, I'll tell you what. The decision to say screw you to the entire conventional process of going to college and instead go all the way to the other side of the world to play in a professional basketball league with guys who are 3, 5, 8, 12 years older than you and doing that instead and thinking that you're going to excel well enough to do that and then entering the draft after 1 year of doing that, that's a confident decision.
Yeah, no doubt.
That is. That's a ballsy move. Anyone who does that is like, that dude's ballsy. Like, that is that's a real move to be able to do that at 18 years old, just move to the other side of the world and do that. That's hard. That's not an easy thing to do at any point, let alone when you're 18, you know?
Yeah, for sure. People ask this question. I'm sorry, I'm taking over your podcast again. People ask this question. Do you think that this sends a message to Russell Westbrook? Because people like to hear strong statements. Do you think, Fred Katz, that it sends a message to Russell Westbrook?
I heard that question. I mean, before you asked it. And you know what my gripe with that question is? Like,
what?
Why do they need to send a message to Russell Westbrook? They can just tell him what they're thinking. Like, why do they need to send this message through the being of the number, whoever get pick at number 21? Why can't they just be like, hey, Russell, here's the message. We're just going to tell you.
Yeah. Like, my problem with it is if you're going to, if you're sending a message through the 21st pick in the draft, you're already screwed.
Yeah, sure. Like the Thunder aren't the Knicks. They're not just going to not talk to their star player for 2 months.
Oh man, right. Yeah.
Like,
hey man, the Thunder draft and stash special has been the Thunder's draft and stash special is now Cantor and Terrence Ferguson. You feel like that's more appealing to people?
Yeah. Explain the draft and stash. It's good. It's really good. I like that.
So I put out on Twitter the other night, I said, we need to nickname the draft and stash, or not the, we need to nickname Cantor and the 21st pick, because I'm kind of tired of saying that. So it's, I got lots of submissions, and the draft and stash special is by far the best.
The draft and stash special is really good. Stash, of course, spelled S-T-A-C-H-E.
Yes. Mustache for Cantor's mustache. So
you know what, though, this, Andrew?
Yeah.
There might be – although the pick is going to Utah next year, but they'll have a second-round pick that's going to be high probably because it's Chicago, which is something else I wanted to talk about too.
Mm-hmm.
The draft and stash may still be alive in June of 2018 too, so I wouldn't be too. I wouldn't retire that name yet.
That's totally true. Hey, that Bulls pick is going to be good. Like those second round picks in the 30s, like those are worth something.
I had such a deja vu last night. So when the Bulls made, and I feel like you probably had the same moment as I did. So when the Bulls mm-hmm. when the Bulls made the Jimmy Butler trade. I see it on, I think Stein reported it, right? And I see it on Twitter, and I see Minnesota is sending Zach LaVine, Chris Dunn, number 7 pick to Chicago for Jimmy Butler. And I was like, I can't believe that Chicago is doing that deal after holding out Jimmy Butler deals and talking about them for God knows how long. They've been talking about trading Jimmy Butler, and this is the one they pulled the trigger on. Like, Dunn was not good this year at all, and LaVine is coming off a torn ACL, and they're getting the 7th pick, and they go with Lowry marketing on that pick. And I was just like, why did they do this? And then comes trickling out that the 16th pick is also involved. And my first reaction, because I just kind of scanned the tweet, was, oh, well, that makes more sense. Like, I guess Minnesota is giving up another pick. And I was like, wait, Minnesota doesn't have the 16th pick. That can't be right. And then I was like, wait, Chicago is giving up the 16th pick. And I was like, what? Why the hell are they giving up the 16th pick? And it was the exact reaction that I had when the Cameron Payne deal went down. I was like, I can't believe this is all they're giving up for Doug McDermott and Taj Gibson. What a steal from Chicago. And then it comes out 5 minutes later, there's a second round pick involved. And I was like, oh, the Thunder are giving up a second round pick, but they don't really have second round picks to give up. Which one is it? And then it turns out Chicago is giving up the second round pick. And I was like, how are they doing this twice in like 4 months? What is going on?
It's a disaster. It's a disaster, especially for a team that is they're in a full on rebuild and you're giving away draft picks. I mean, it makes no sense. It's a disaster.
And that deal was so weird. And it has a direct effect on the Thunder because of the Cameron Payne deal. Also, Cameron Payne now, they made that deal because they supposedly loved Cameron Payne. At least that's what they were. That was word around the league. Chicago made that deal, which was, for a refresher, Anthony Morrow, who's a free agent this year and is not going back to Chicago unless he's just like 15th man on a minimum deal. Joffrey LeVern, who's a restricted free agent this year and also did not get minutes in Chicago. And Cameron Payne, for Doug McDermott, Taj Gibson, and an unprotected second-round pick from Chicago in 2018. And Cameron Payne, the word was, around the league, Chicago really likes Cameron Payne. They really like Cameron Payne. That front office really likes Cameron Payne. And then they just didn't play him, to the point that Cameron Payne actually was the Bulls' starting point guard. The problem was he was just the Windy City Bulls' starting point guard. And
right.
And now they go and they trade for Chris Dunn. It's like, why were you making – you could have – even if you had no intention of re-signing Taj Gibson, and even if you thought that Doug McDermott was just irredeemable on defense and that's why you got rid of him, that's fine. But those guys had value. You got a young lottery pick from 2015 for him, if you thought that Cameron Payne wasn't good, and if it took you that short to think that he isn't good, then you couldn't have thought he was that good to begin with. And I don't know why there was so much word around the league that they thought he was that good. They're training for other guys. You know, another point guard now is going to start over Payne and won't be able to play with Payne in all likelihood. Like, why are you doing that deal? And why are you also giving up an unprotected second-round pick in order to do it? It just lends even more questions to that Cameron Payne deal, which already had a bunch of questions around it.
Yeah, they went from Jerian Grant to Cameron Payne to Chris Dunn in like a year.
Like, don't forget those three about, guys. Don't forget about they've had Rondo and they've had Michael Carter-Williams and they've had Isaiah Cannon.
Mm-hmm.
They have so many point guards.
Any of those guys are good? Like, if you were to bet on one of those Bulls point guards being any good, which one would you bet on?
Oh, Rondo's the best one.
Well, the young guys.
Rookie scale guys.
Yeah.
I guess Chris Dunn.
Yeah. I guess just because he was a top five pick.
Yeah, and like, he's 23 now, I think. Which, he was not a young pick, but,
mm-hmm.
I mean, we know Michael Carter-Williams isn't good.
Right.
And maybe he can have like a Sean Livingston-like resurrection because he's pretty smart guy. So maybe later in his career he can just be that like really long, lanky point guard who can also play the two and also play the three and defends hard at those positions and figures out how to team defend and like mm-hmm. doesn't really score or shoot well but like kind of perfects a 12 to 16 foot game. You know, and is a good bat, like is a really valuable, you know, bench piece. I could see that happening with MCW, but mm-hmm. that's like all projection. Like, there's no evidence that's going to happen right now. He's just a significantly below average NBA player at this point, and Isaiah Cannon is what he is. Jaren Grant is not young either.
No.
I would.
No, he was an old rookie.
I would say Chris Dunn. Who would you say? But I'm not enthralled with any of them, to be honest.
Yeah. I would say none of them. I would bet on none of them. I mean, Chris Dunn's got to be the guy, but people are like, well, I think he just might be a two. That just is a really good defender.
Cool. And well, then I'm glad you got Zach guard. Levine along with him then. Like, who is strictly a two.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, exactly.
Hey, if the Thunder could get Michael Carter-Williams on a minimum deal, would you do it?
I mean, it depends on what the other options are out there, but he's better than what they have now.
Yeah.
At least he, like, gets into passing lanes because he's so long.
Yeah.
Like, but he's not a really good point guard or anything like that. I mean, he was not good at all in Chicago. But he's an upgrade on what they have now. I mean, they had the worst backup point guards in the league this year. Right? Them and Chicago had the worst point guards.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I don't think I would. I just don't know I don't even know if it's worth the flyer. Like, maybe it is, but I don't know. I think that, I mean, the Thunder obviously have to start thinking about backup point guards as free agents now.
I mean, I'd rather... If you can get like Beno Udrih for the minimum, I'd rather him.
Yeah. Shelvin Mack is the guy that I think would be a good fit because I think he can play a little bit on both ends and he's serviceable.
He might cost you something though.
How much do you think he gets on the market? Because I really have no idea what to think about this point guard market because I think a lot of teams got the point guards that they need in the draft. And so I have no clue what to think about it.
I wouldn't be shocked if somebody gave Shelvin Mack like the biannual.
Hmm.
Right?
Yeah, that's a lot. That's a lot.
I wouldn't be shocked. I mean, he is a minimum. I have not asked around about Shelvin Mack, so I've shelved my conversations.
You haven't done your due diligence on Shelvin Mack.
No. Even Mrs. Mack hasn't been asking around about Shelvin Mack.
That's right.
I have not asked Ryan about you. I mean, he does some positive stuff. He'd be an upgrade too. I mean, there are point guards on the market. Mm-hmm. Felton's a good backup, and Livingston's a great backup. I mean, there are there are legitimate point guards in the market. I don't think Darren Collison is a possibility for them. I really don't. With the emphasis that they outwardly have on character, I would just be really surprised if they went for somebody like him. So I don't think that's a possibility. If it is, I would be shocked if Darren Collison were a guy that we're going to get. Hey, how funny was it last night during the draft when every team was just leaking picks to national reporters and gets up to Shams, breaks the 20th pick while the TV broadcast is still on the 16th pick, and then the Thunder pick just didn't leak. Wasn't that so Thunder?
How proud is Sam Presti about that?
Sam Presti's presser was only for 18 minutes. And I was going to ask him a question about that. But they his exit interview was like an hour. They kind of cut off questions. You know, Matt Tumbleson, who's their director of communications, said, you know, a couple more questions for Sam. And I was like, I have like real questions. If it got to a point where all the real questions were done, that was the point I was going to ask, because I had one more real question I didn't get a chance to ask about, which I was upset with. But because I wanted,
what was it?
I wanted to ask him about the cap projections from a couple nights ago coming out, and the luxury tax and the salary cap are down from 121 to 119 and 101 to 99. And if he anticipates that having an effect on how they operate in free agency, and if that had an effect on how they operated during the draft.
Yeah, that's a really good question. It made me wonder if it had an effect on them buying a pick.
That's exactly what I would have been getting at with that question. Yep, exactly. Because they now they're closer to the luxury tax, and they're like, oh, we better hold on to that $3.5 million because we might need to pay that in luxury tax dollars.
Yep. Yeah, that makes sense. And I liked a lot of the second rounders, but the truth is, if you're like beating your head against a wall today because the Thunder didn't get like Juwan Evans or somebody, like, okay, like we're a little off base. Like things are, but even though there's all these articles today about winners and losers, blah, 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 like go read a winners and losers article from 2012 and then get back with me, because these draft nights, there's actually really no real winners and losers. On draft night,
we're all,
because you don't know.
Nobody knows.
We all win.
Yeah, we all win. One thing to look out for that I will say with Terrence Ferguson is I am very intrigued, because we talked about the cap projection coming down from 101 to 99, luxury tax projection coming down from 121 to 119. Mm-hmm. One thing to look out for with Terrence Ferguson, because the Thunder have $110 million on the books. This podcast is going to go up on Friday. It is Friday. Tomorrow is the deadline for picking up Jeremy Grant's team option. My guess, I can guess, my educated guess, my informed guess, is they're going to pick that up. So that's an extra $1.5 million right there. They're going to have about $111.5 million, and then they're still going to have to sign Ferguson. Now, if Terrence Ferguson conspicuously signs for 80% of the rookie scale, then we might have an idea as to why they took him at 21.
Yeah. No, I mean, that makes sense. And so it's, we'll kind of interesting.
Maybe he won't do that. But if he signs for – it's happened before. Andre Roberson in 2013 signed for 80% of the rookie scale. And that was like a, whoa, Andre Roberson signed for 80% of the rookie scale. And you know, there was a lot of talk about Frank Jackson, with them being really interested in Frank Jackson, and I don't know why I'm phrasing it passively, because I was one of the people talking about it.
Yeah.
They liked Frank Jackson, and I just didn't necessarily think it was a coincidence that they were strapped for cash, and Frank Jackson's agent is the same as Andre Roberson's agent, and Frank Jackson, everyone had going at some point in the second round, some early, some middle of the second round, but everyone had him as a second rounder. He eventually was a second rounder, and it was a similar situation to Roberson, where people had Roberson early to mid second round, and he slipped into the first round, and in part because he agreed to take 80% of the rookie deal, and Jackson and Roberson have the same agents, and Roberson's a free agent this summer, and some of that money could have gone to Roberson. I was like, oh, there are all these dots, and they just all make sense, and I really thought it was going to be Frank Jackson. I just thought that made a lot of sense from a roster building standpoint, and it wasn't Frank Jackson. They ended up going with somebody else, and obviously, it's obvious that a basketball decision drove that part. There's no question about that. But I'm intrigued to see what the contract that Ferguson signs is going to be, because the Thunder have always been crafty about the draft from a financial perspective as well as from a basketball and talent perspective. And the story is not over with Ferguson just yet. We're going to see what contract he signs, and that'll be a story on its own.
Yeah, I'd be a little surprised if he signed for 80%, just because he was even projected to go earlier than 21 in some mock drafts, and I'm sure people were telling him that he could go as high as like 15 or whatever. And I think Frank Jackson made a ton of sense to sign for 80% because he wasn't getting a guaranteed, you know, deal, you know, in the first round. And I think that's to some guys, that's really important to be drafted in the first round. It may or may not have been to him, but he'll probably still get a good deal being the 31st pick. But I'd be a little surprised, but that would be nice. It'd be very, very kind of him to give up money to help the Thunder.
I agree with you. If I had to predict, I would not predict him signing for 80% of the rookie scale. I just, whatever contract he does sign is going to be interesting because it's a difference of a decent amount of money considering how close the Thunder are to the tax. And I just, that will be, if he signs for 120% or anything less, like whatever contract he signs, normally the, you know, team signs first round pick is just like a throwaway piece of, you know, it's a 100 word blog that I throw up and that's it. You know, it's like it's a given. And the story here is not going to be that they signed Terrence Ferguson. Obviously they're signing Terrence Ferguson. The story is just whatever type of contract that he signs is going to tell us a little something further about how the Thunder are going to operate in this situation that is unprecedented for the organization and for Sam Presti since he's been running it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
That'll be for basketball nerds. That's going to be fun to follow.
That's right.
You got anything else?
That's all I got. I don't know anything about Terrence Ferguson, everybody.
Nothing. Tell people about, I'm sure many people have heard you on this podcast before, but tell people about Down to Dunk anyway.
Yeah, we are an Oklahoma City Thunder podcast. Today I interviewed Jonathan Charks. He's from The Ringer, and he gave us some info on Terrence Ferguson. And then I also attached, we had a live draft party last night at Anthem Brewing. That was really fun. And you get to hear kind of the crowd reaction whenever the pick happens, and we talk a little bit about him, and it's super fun. So you can go download that podcast. We're on dailythunder.com. We're also on Almighty Baller Radio. So go check us out.
Awesome. And I'm on Monday, Wednesday, Friday. I'll be back on next week again, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. So Monday is the awards show, the NBA awards show. For those who don't know, the NBA is doing like an Oscars-style red carpet for its awards. So that's like MVP, Defensive Player of the Year, all that kind of stuff. And that's going to be in New York. So I'm going to be at that, and I'm going to have a podcast up Monday morning previewing that. That's on Monday night. And then Wednesday's episode will be wrapping that all up. And Friday, is Friday the first day of Orlando Summer League or is Saturday?
That's a good question.
It's July 1st. July 1st is the first day. So yeah, Friday's episode will be something Summer League-y. We're getting into Summer League. It's like the off season now.
So fun. I love Summer League.
I love Vegas Summer League. I kind of think Orlando Summer League's a little boring.
It can be, unless Mitch McGarry is bringing the ball up the court and running fast breaks by himself, then it's really fun.
You know, the secretary in the high school office of my high school was named Miss McNary. And whenever people say Mitch McGarry, I think of Miss McNary.
You have to end your show right now. Just cut it off right there.
No, I have to have this outro so I can tell people about myself. That's what Locke. Okay. Locke wants me to tell people about myself, and I'm going to tell people about myself. So you can listen to iTunes. You can listen to us on iTunes and stuff like that. Questions or comments, email lockedonthunder@gmail.com. Find me on Twitter at Fred Katz, FREDKATZ. Find Andrew K. Schlecht, SCHLECHT. Log on to normantranscript.com for all your Thunder needs. Check out Thunder Road to follow team coverage and what's next for the Thunder there. That is going to do it for today. For Andrew, for Mitch McGarry, for Miss McNary, we're locking it up. See you Monday.
Lock it up.
Lock it up.